Good morning, Boker Tov. We're preparing for Chanukah, a very special time. Habalin Latova, please God. And I wanted to reflect with you on an aspect of Chanukah that on one level is very simple. It's a pedestrian, probably we've thought about it from one perspective, but it's also very deep, and maybe we haven't considered it in this light from a different perspective. So many of us are familiar. You don't have it in front of you, so I'll read it out. We'll bless the copy machine for next time, maybe eventually. It's all good. You'll hear it. My Chanukah. Chaf Aleph Amid Beis 21b in the Gemara and Shabbos. The Tana Rabbanon that the rabbis learned. Bechav Hei BeKislev, on the 25th of Kislev, Yomei DeChanukah Tamnia Inon. The days of Chanukah, this is an Aramaic passage, so the word Tamnia, the Tuf and Shin in Hebrew are Mischalev, they are interchangeable. So Tamnia is the same thing as saying Shmona. There are 8 days. Delo lemispat bahon, not to have eulogies. Udelo lehisanos bahon, not to fast on them. Why? Shekishenichnasu yivanim lehechol. When the Greeks entered into the sanctuary of the Beis Hamikdash, timu kol hashmanim shebehechol. They defiled all of the oils in the hechol. Ukishagavra Malchus Beis Chashmonai v'nitzchum, and when the Hasmoneans, when the family which would become the kingdom of the Chashmonaim vanquished the Greeks, Bodku v'lomotzu elapach echad shel shemen, they searched and they found only one, they did not find except for one jug of oil, Shayamunach b'chosamo shel kohen gadol, that was placed there with the stamp, the seal of the Kohen Gadol. The problem was, the Hemshech says, V'lo haya bo lahad ella lahadlik yom echad. There was only sufficient oil to sustain the menorah lighting for one night. Right? They would light it in the afternoon and then it would burn all night into the morning. So Nas and Bones, a miracle occurred with it, Vehidliku Mimenu Shmona Yamim. And therefore, Lishana Acheres, a later year, a different year, Kvaum Vaasaum Yamim Tovim Bahalal Vahoda. They established it and they fixed it as these days of Yom Tov Bahalal Vahoda. Now, we don't observe them as Yom Tov in the technical halachic sense of Isser Malacha, but we do observe them with Halal and Hodah, and the Rama points out there's a minute to have a feast with Divrei Torah. Did we ever ask ourselves why it was that the Nes of the Pach Shemen was necessitated by such a small cruse of oil? It's just an accident of history that there needed to be such a small jug.
I'm
asking myself, why is it that this whole Chanukah miracle, it's so small. It's like little. It's a miracle of the little.
So let me say it might be the same, the Pach is like what Yaakov went back for.
Good, very good. So maybe some Darshanim. Very good. So Mrs. Rosen is already going down the path here, that the small things matter, which is exactly what we're going to try to develop in a deep way. Maybe it's connected to Yaakov Avinu, who was careful to go back over the river, right? It says he ended up alone fighting with an angel because he was searching for Pachim Ketanim, according to Chazal. So maybe the Pach, it is a small jug. But it's interesting to me that it's a small jug. And it's not, if you contrast it with Purim, which is a huge national event. This is a very, very small, isolated incident that is probably not perceptible to most people. Most people probably weren't aware of it. The fact that it was a small jug of oil, to me, is very interesting. So how do we respond to this miracle? So earlier the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, mitzvah Chanukah ner ishu beiso. The mitzvah of Chanukah is to light one candle each person in their house. That's the whole story. One tiny candle. But we take it for granted. We've done it for so long. So we're like, yeah, of course, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Ner Ishu Beiso, and that's it. But did we ever ask ourselves the question, why is that the way that it is? And what is the meaning of that? And the fact that it's one little candle, that's the only way they're going to commemorate it? And so much so, you know, the din is, let's say you have a bowl. In those days, the word ner, what was a ner? Everybody know what is a ner? What?
The lamp.
The lamp, exactly. It wasn't a candle. We use wax candles or we use electric bulbs for light. They used to use like the Aladdin, you know, like a bowl with a wick coming out of an opening. So the Gemara wants to know, what if you, let's say a person didn't have a functional regular lamp, they just had a bowl, so they put oil in it and you put wicks in it. So Gemara says that's not acceptable for Neres Chanukah. Why not? Because that's so many wicks blended together. That's an avuka. You have to divide it up. It has to be separate neros, meaning separate little compartments. When it comes to Havdalah, you want to have an avuka. You want to have a beautiful ma'ori ha'esh, right? L'chatchila, you're supposed to have multiple wicks, at least two wicks, to create an illumination on Motsoi Shabbos of or. So we have ma'ori ha'esh, we have multiple. But on Hanukkah, if you have ma'ori ha'esh, it's disqualified. It's interesting. It's dafka, one little candle. And then Chazal say, and then Chazal say, well, if you want to be Mahadrin, so what do? Beis Shammai says, you light eight and you go down to one. Beis Hillel says you go from one to eight. That's the most ideal. Mahadrin min Mahadrin. This is an intervening stage of Ner L'Kol Echad Ve'Echad. But it's usually either the person doesn't have enough candles, so they light the basic, or they light, and this is the only way it's called in Shulchan Aruch, what we have, Mahadrin min Mahadrin. What's such a great Mahadrin min Mahadrin? A great Mahadrin min Mahadrin is, you light one candle on the first night, and you light eight on the eighth night, one for each night. The Mahadrin, the beautification of the mitzvah, is still modifying and is still within the context of a small candle. It just becomes a candelabra, which, by the way, is an interesting question. Halacha lemaisa, do you even need a menorah? Shachtas tells us a story that when Rav Soloveitchik was still living, at the end of his life, he was living during the week. He would stay in the morgue dorm, in the Morgenstern dormitory at YU, and then he would go home to Boston. And when he was in the dorm, he had an apartment that was once in that apartment, and there was one of the boys who was the shamish, so would stay with him. So one night of Chanukah, they went to light Chanukah candles, and there was no menorah. They only had candles or tea lights. So Rav Soloveitchik told the boy, so put out the tea lights and we'll light them. So the boy told Rav Soloveitchik, but Rav Shechter said in the shir that we have to have a menorah. So the way that Rav Shechter describes the story is that Rav Soloveitchik responded to him, and then this boy went back to Rav Shechter, because Rav Shechter was giving shiurim while Rav Soloveitchik was still giving shiurim in the yeshiva. So apparently, the way the Rav Shechter describes it, the Rav said to this boy, "Tell Rabbi Shechter he's crazy." Shechter loves to tell that story. What are they discussing? They're discussing whether the din requires that you have an actual menorah, or it's enough just to put a few tea lights. But the point is that whether you need a menorah, or it's enough to have just a few tea lights set up in a row, it's all a modification. It's a hiddur of a tiny mitzvah. So the mitzvah is reflecting, it seems to me, the nes. The nes was a tiny little nes. And the mitzvah is a tiny little mitzvah. It's interesting, as far as I'm aware, if you look in the Rambam, you do not find any mention of Hadlakas Neros Chanukah in a Beis HaKnesses. If you look in the whole Gemara here, there is no mention of Hadlakas Neros in a public place or in a shul. So over the years,
only
in the house. That's the thing. If you look in the Gemara, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to light one candle in your house, and that's it. What the Acharonim and
a single candle one time
every night, once a night, once a night for 8 nights.
But only in your home.
Only in your house. That's the thing. If you look in Chazal, if you look in the Gemara, if you look in the Rambam, if you look in the Rif, you don't have anything beyond this. Then, already at the time of the Beis Yosef, in the later Rishonim, they quote, there's an old minhag, which, by the way, is a Chiddush, and I wonder, I don't know if in Sephardic shuls they make a bracha, because usually for Sephardim, they do not make a bracha on a minhag, and this is not even a minhag which is mentioned in the Gemara. It's an old minhag, so we don't know exactly. I wonder, I could look. Maybe someone has done some research on the origins of this minhag to light in the Beis HaKnesses. So it's interesting that this minhag is so old and so strong that we even recite a bracha on this minhag. Probably because...
We're about making kiddush and shul.
Oh, very good. So some achronim suggest that the truth is that this minhag is actually related to a different minhag that you're referring to. Why did they used to make kiddush and shul?
Because somebody didn't have it at home.
That's right. So why, some suggest, why did they start with Hadlakas Neros in a shul? Because?
People didn't have neighbors.
They didn't have a place to sleep. They didn't have a place to eat, Lo Aleinu. It's hard for us. This is a different kind of thing for us, Bizman Hazeh, which is why in many shuls, when I grew up, we never had Kiddush Friday night in the shul. Because in many places, this was a minhag that went out of style because there was no real basis if you didn't have people sleeping there. But back in the day, there were people who literally slept in the shul. They ate in the shul. That's the way it was. Kachaya.
And does each household member light one candle every day?
Good. So that's another question. Depends on the practice of your family. So technically speaking, it's ner ish ubeso. The whole family is together. And then say you have a guest even sleeping over. That guest would give you a pruta. The guest will give you a dollar or a quarter, and he'll contribute financially, and he'll be in. But the practice in many homes is that the different people who live in the house light candles, different practices, different homes. I don't know if in your house, if you light the Chanukah menorah. In my house, my wife does not light the Chanukah menorah. My mother didn't light. But in many homes, women light their own Chanukah menorah. Different practices, different homes. Mishnah Berurah discusses rationale for why they should, why they shouldn't.
But the wife might be different from another female.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's say an adult woman is different because there's a strange comment some Achronim have, Ishto Kagufo, which is hard to understand what Ishto Kagufo has to do with Hadlakas Neros. But there's different practices. But strictly speaking, one menorah suffices for the whole house. This was also different between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. It's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Bali and Tosfos. When the Gemara here says, Mahadrim and a Mahadrim go from 1 to 8, does that apply to every person in the house?
Right.
To the Ner L'Kol Echad V'Echad, which was the intermediate stage, where it's the best thing to do is have one menorah for the whole house, and that's what's it. And that's what seems from the Bali HaTosfos. The Tosfos think that, the best thing to do is, no matter how many people you have in your house, the best thing to do is to have only one menorah. But it's interesting that in Ashkenazic circles, we follow the Rambam, that the Mahadran and Mahadran modifies everyone's menorah. But why am I saying all this? Why is this the discussion, the story about the Beis HaKnesses? Because it's so interesting to me that that was not part of the Takana. We're accustomed to lighting in the shul, and which begot a whole nother series of halachic questions of what about lighting in public places? What about lighting at Hanukkah parties? What about lighting at dinners or in the town square? So if the din of Hadlakas Neiros and the Beis HaKnesses is based on the earlier idea that's because people are living in the shul, just because people are living in the shul doesn't mean that you should light in the town square. But if you say that, no, the Gemara says that the reason for Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah, Pesach Beis Umi Bachutz, is because of Pirsumei Nisa. Oh, once you have the concept of Pirsumei Nisa, it makes sense that you should light in the shul, which is Mepharsim the Nes. And then perhaps, this is where Poskim deal with on a contemporary level, perhaps then, well, maybe you should also be Mepharsim the Nes in a broader context, in the town square, or if you have a Hanukkah party, or at a dinner, or something like that. And then there's the Shaila that the Poskim are dealing with. Can you make a bracha on that? Which is very interesting, because if the Ikar HaDin is that you light in your home and you make a bracha, so then it's a chiddush to say that you can make a bracha on the Neiros of a Beis HaKnesses. It would be a further chiddush to say that you could, but you will find some Poskim describe this because of that logic that it's an extension of Pirsumei Nisa, then you could potentially even recite a bracha on Hadlakas Neiros in a public place for the purpose of Pirsumei Nisa. You know, it's each year. This is probably because it's a din of a Beis HaKnesses, but if I'm not mistaken, I don't think I was ever there, but I've seen pictures of they have a beautiful Hadlakas Neiros ceremony at the Kotel with a big, beautiful menorah. So it's interesting to me that that's not the din. That's not in the Gemara. And that Chazal did not formulate this din as one being a din in the Tzibur. In contrast to Mikra Megillah, where in the Megillah you see in the Gemara a strong emphasis on Barov Am Hadras Melech, on the importance of doing Mikra Megillah B'tzibur, and that there are different halachos. The Gemara has multiple opinions in the Gemara and Megillah about what happens if you light the Megillah at home versus if you read the Megillah B'tzibur. Maybe you have a different bracha.
But also maybe, the days that they would read the Megillah were a function of market days and things like that also, where people would be...
Beautiful. The whole takana, what Rabbi Michael's talking about, something they used to have, it was called the Yom HaKnisa. Today, we don't have this din. We read the Megillah today on the 14th, Yerushalayim on the 15th, and that's it. But in the days of the Gemara, they wanted to make sure that people could gather so to benefit the people who were water carriers and food suppliers and distributors and people who were coming to the Beis Din. So they would gather people together. They would have special Yom HaKnisa. There's an idea that it's big and it's together, it's huge. Barov Am Adras Melech. Not so on Hanukkah, would seem to me. And I think, perhaps, this is because of a very important and deep yesod in Yadus, which we will illustrate with three stories. The first is a story that appears in a book. It's a very hard book, but it's a very worthwhile book nonetheless. It's so difficult that Chazal wanted to put this book away into Geniza until they could figure it out. The book is authored by Shlomo HaMelech, and he tells us a little story. It's called Koheles. A little story. He says, you know, this is in the 9th chapter, the end of Perek Tes. He says, Ir Ketana V'Anashim B'Ma'at. I'll tell you a story about a little city, and it had a little number of people, small city, small population. It's very little. Ubo ilea melech godol, a great king, a big king, comes to this little city. And v'savavosa ubo bona alea mitzodim gedolim. And he built huge fortresses around this little city. And he was a big king. Umotzeba ish miskein chacham. And in that city was one man. And not only was a man, he was a Nebuchadnezzar, an ish miskein. Ish miskein. Umilatu esoir b'chachmaso. And he, this ish miskein, this one small man, he saved the whole city from this melech gadol. V'adam lo zachar eso ish miskeinahu. And you know what? No one remembered him. V'amarti ani tova chachma migvura v'chachma samiskein b'zuyo udvarav ein of nishmoim. But nonetheless, that's where it's at. This ish miskein, this small, you could say pathetic man, with his wisdom, was able to save the entire city from this melech gadol. That's the story. You like the story?
I'd like to know how he did it.
We'll explain it right now. So to unpack this story, Gewalt, to unpack this story, we have the help of a great Mefarish, a great Spanish Rishon sage. His name is Rav Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya ben Asher Misaragosa. A Talmud Muvok of the Rashba, one of the great Sephardic giants of the generation after the Ramban. Rabbeinu Bachya. This Rabbeinu Bachya authored a commentary on the Chumash that I'm holding in front of you. This is the Chevelle edition. So Rabbeinu Bachya quotes a medrash and uses that to unpack this story. He says, what is this Ir Katana? The story of the Ir Katana is the Guf HaAdam, is the human body. It's the person. Because every person is a whole world, is an olam katan. And the anoshim ba ma'at, he says the people in this city are very few. He says because the people, meaning the noble desires within us, they're not so many. We're overwhelmed by physical drives, by selfish urges, by motivations that are our base. And comes along a Melech Gadol. Who is the Melech Gadol? The Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is a Melech Gadol because he is so powerful and his grip is so strong. His influence on us is so profound. He has so many weapons at his disposal. And he surrounds us. It's makif. Mibayas umichutz, what he calls mitzudim roim. But there is an ish miskein chacham. Who is the Nebuchadnezzar? The Yetzer Tov. That spark of light. And why is he called pathetic, miskein? Because he's not very popular. Because everyone ignores him. Because all of the temptations overwhelm. And instead of supporting the Yetzer HaTov, they diminish the Yetzer HaTov. They combat the Yetzer HaTov. So it's a miskein. This one ish miskein has to contend with the overwhelming hordes, the influence, the onslaught of the Melech Gadol of the Yetzirah. But guess what's happened? What happens? At the end of the day, even though v'ish lo zachar eso ish miskeino, people don't remember him, don't pay attention to him. Umilatu eso ir b'chachmaso. That with his wisdom, this one man can salvage, can save. Umilat comes from the word rescue. The entire city. You could transform your entire goof, your whole life, with that one little voice of the Ish, of this Ish Miskin. And he says a very powerful line. He says, because Hu Hayetzer HaTov V'Hu HaSeichel Ein Ikar Pu'uloso Ki Imlis Ames HaSheker Ulishaker HaEmes Hine Nefiloso Krova B'Yamis Kenachacham. The Yetzer Hara's job is to take the truth and falsify it, and to take falsehood and present it as virtuous. But that's not going to last in the face of this Ish Chacham. Why? Ki lefi shema'at min ha'emes yinatzeach harbi min ha'sheker. A little bit of truth will vanquish a lot of lies. Kishem, and here is the line. This may be the earliest source of this line, which has become incredibly popular. It's attributed to Rav Kook and the Baal Shem HaKadosh and earlier sources. I wonder, I did try to do some searching to see if this may be the earliest reference to this phrase. Why? Kishem shema'at min ha'or yenatzeach harbi min ha'choshech. Just like a tiny measure of light vanquishes a lot of darkness. The story of the man in the city is the story of the small measure of truth and light that can vanquish the myriad of lies in the darkness. And says the Rabbeinu Bachya, that's the story of each person. That we may be overwhelmed by a Yetzer Hara that was Yetzer Lev HaAdam Raminu Urav, that was selfish from when we were born. But nonetheless, there is that little or that burns within us that can outshine all of the darkness that exists. This is Rabbeinu Bachya in Sefer Bereishis and the story of Cain and Hevel. That perhaps is the secret to everything. That ma'at min ha'or, that a little bit of light, just a small amount, has the capacity to illuminate our entire lives. Very often we go through life, and it's natural and it's normal, that we feel we're in a period of choshech, a period of darkness. We feel that we are lost, we can't see. When it's dark, we don't have clarity, we don't have vision. We are not able to navigate easily how to find our way through difficult roads. We feel that it's dark outside. You know, at this time of year, of course, you're getting the metaphor soon. It's a very dark time. The amount of light is diminished to the extreme. It's almost always, Hanukkah almost always runs like this year, around the time when the days are literally the shortest of the year. And that reflects an inner feeling that sometimes we feel that our lives have choshech. That we are overwhelmed by that melech gadol. The darkness that descends on our neshamas, and we just feel like we're not illuminated, we're not on fire, and our soul is, we feel it's diminished and depressed. And says Rabbeinu Bachya, that's okay, don't worry. Because ma'at min ha'or, a little bit of light, that Ish Chacham that exists within us, that or, it doesn't take so much to drive away all of the Choshech. There might be a ton of Choshech outside. It might be that the Choshech has even seeped inside. But that's still okay, because the little amount of or that we still have left that always burns, we can amplify it to drive everything out. There's a beautiful book. I love this book of stories. It's called Nacha Stories, Classic Hasidic Stories by the famous psychiatrist, Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Tversky. So he has a story that I'm going to share with you. But it's not just the story that to me is very powerful that fits with this theme. It's the name of the chapter, the title of this chapter. The chapter in the book, which is the 11th chapter of this book of stories, is called Just a Bit of Light. It's the Ma'at Min Ha'or. The Ma'at Min Ha'or that reminds us that we have the ability to drive out the Choshech from without and within, even just with a little bit of or. So his father was a great Hasidic master. This is, you know, that you're talking about. Oh, did you know?
I grew up with
him. Did you know his father?
Of course. I grew up with him.
Amazing. I think his name was Yisrael. What was his first name? His father's Yaakov. First name? Yaakov. Yaakov Yisrael or Yaakov something. Yaakov. His name was Yaakov. So he tells a story that his father told him. So he says that his father knew a man in Kiev who during Tsarist Russia was trying to get ahead in life. And if you were a Yid living in Tsarist Russia in Kiev, you didn't have a lot of prospects, let's just say.
Pogrom.
What's that?
There was the pogrom in those days, and the Jews suffered a lot.
Oh. So this man, in order to advance his political career and his personal ambition, he put away all of his Yiddishkeit. He gave up everything. And through that, by demonstrably renouncing his Yiddishkeit, he was able to actually procure a really good job and ultimately a prestigious, prominent place in the government. That's the background of the story, that Dr. Twersky says that his father, Zichrono Levracha, who David knew from the shul in Milwaukee, he says that the Amaisa Shahaya was that unfortunately, one day there was a man, the body of a man, a corpse, that washed up on the bank of a nearby river, and there was no way to identify this person. Except that he wore tzitzis. So because they couldn't know anything else about him, they had no idea who his name was, or what his name was, or where he was from. But because he wore tzitzis, so they knew he was Jewish, so they brought him to Kever Yisrael to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Wow. And somehow, the young man who was unfortunately far from Yiddishkeit, heard about this story that there was this man who had been found and was buried in a Jewish cemetery. And although he himself, this assimilated Jew, had given up everything, he thought to himself, I want to at least have that. At least at the end I should have a burial in the Jewish cemetery. Because at that point, he has nothing to lose. Being buried as a Jew, that's not going to take anything away. So he was trying to figure out what to do. So you know he decided. He figured he's going to wear tzitzis. Because wearing tzitzis, why is that a good etzah?
Identifies him as a Jew.
Right, but?
It's hidden.
That's right.
It's hidden.
You don't have him out there. It's inside. Nobody can see that you're wearing it.
Oh, it's
He didn't have his tzitzis out, so he has it inside. So he can keep that little mitzvah of the tzitzis and still lead his totally secular life. But once he started wearing this talis katan, Rabbi Twersky Zichr Tzadik Levracha says, all of a sudden, small things started to happen to him in his life. The next year comes around September time. You know, there's one day that he feels like he really shouldn't go to work. And he probably shouldn't eat anything either. Even though he's still totally secular, but it's Yom Kippur. How can he wear a talis katan? And so he began gradually to not eat kosher, not eat treif, excuse me, to only eat kosher, because that's easy. You know, you bring a sandwich to work every day, it's not such a big deal. So now instead of bringing a ham sandwich, you bring a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And la'at la'at ma'at ma'at, eventually, this person completely came back to the Jewish community.
Chuzer b'tshuva.
And Dr. Tversky says, what's the whole story behind this man? He was not even interested in Yiddishkeit in his lifetime at all, but there was a ma'at min ha'or. There was a little bit of light in his soul that this one mitzvah tapped into, and that one mitzvah tapped into the one little spark of his soul that ultimately illuminated so brightly. And perhaps, based on all of this, we can understand the story of Hanukkah. That Chazal perhaps are trying to tell us that even though there is an element of pursuing Nisa in the mitzvah of Hanukkah, the Ikar Takana is this exact message, which is that it's not about a huge furnace. It's not about an avuka. It's about a little nair. The nair Hashem Nishmas Adam. That spark that is within the Jew. It's the melech, it's the ish chacham. Chachma is referred to as or. It's that little bit of or that can be docha harba min achoshech. Because if Chazal had been misaking that we have to have a huge lighting ceremony and bring everybody in costumes to the shul, and someone's going to get up in the front and on behalf of everybody light a gigantic torch, we would have lost the key message. Because when the Jew will go home and the Jew will feel that they're in the dark and they're totally assimilated and that they don't feel that they have that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're going to say, I'm lost. The only way to combat that is to go to the shul and get everybody together and be together. But that's not the din. The message of Hanukkah is dafka. The rabim biyad ma'atim. The many at the hands of the few. And perhaps it would seem to me that's why the Mahadran, the people who are Mahadran, to do even more. You still only light a few candles al Pesach beis omi bachutz. And that's perhaps why we started with the miracle being about one pach. One little jug. Maybe because that's the point. The point is to tell us that at periods of time in which it is dark for us, when our neshama feels that it's surrounded by darkness and the forces of choshech, when Chazal referred to Yavan in the Seder, in the sequence of the Golios, in the first pasuk in Bereishis, Vaharetz ha'isa so vavo v'choshech al panei sa'om v'ruach elokim is Mashiach, choshech zu Yavan. So when a person feels that it's dark outside and they're enveloped by the choshech of Yavan, of darkness, of exile, and that darkness of exile could even be when they're in shul, when they have a Beis HaMikdash, when they're going through their Jewish life, but they feel uninspired, that they don't have a connection, Chazal told us, don't worry. There's always a pach katan. There's a small jug, one jug. And you might think that that jug does not have enough fuel to help me survive. Because to get real oil, it took them 4 days to travel to where they were going to get tahor oil. And then it was going to be 4 days back. And a person feels they don't have enough kochos. They don't have enough spiritual fuel or energy to keep them inspired, to keep them connected. They feel isolated in the dark, alone. Chazal tell us, that's where the Chanukah menorah comes in. That's where the nes appears on the scene. When it feels that we are overwhelmed by the melech gadol of the Yetzer Hara of Choshech, we have just a little pach. And that's perhaps why the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't do a miracle that they would find a huge storehouse of oil. Could have done that. The Ribbono Shel Olam is Kol Yachol. But he bedavka wanted it this way, that we should understand that we should never be lost. We should never feel that we don't have the ability to light it up. Even if all we have left is that pach katan, that ma'at min ha'or, that little bit of light. But that's the story. That's the story of Shlomo HaMelech. That's the story that Dr. Tversky tells us. And that is the story, that is an amazing story. Because this story was told, this is a Chanukah story that fits with this thesis of Ma'at Men Ha'or Doche Harbe Men HaChoshech. This story was told at the United Nations. You can watch it online. The story was told at the United Nations. Before that, it was told at an address at the 92nd Street Y. It was published in a book. It's one of the most, maybe, famous stories about this thesis of Ma'ad Min Ha'or Docha Harbe Min Ha'Choshech, and it was told by none other than the current Prime Minister of the State of Israel. The Prime Minister of the State of Israel, you Google it, it's online, it's on YouTube. I watched it again this week when I was preparing. It's amazing. That the Prime Minister of Israel stands up before the United Nations and tells them that he went to meet the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichron Levracha. The Rebbe Zatzal sent a message when he was named the Israeli ambassador to the UN, and it's a whole unbelievable maisa that he describes how when he came to 770, what it was like, and how incredible it was, and how he stood there for a long time talking to the Rebbe, and how the Rebbe told him many things. So the story itself, the backstory is unbelievable. Ein Sham, you can find it online. Chabad has it on their website, chabad.org. I think in the Telushkin book, he also has it, the Rebbe story. It's an amazing, amazing story. But the punchline of it, which Netanyahu said at the UN, he says that the Rebbe told him that you are going to a house of lies where there is overwhelming darkness. But the Rebbe said to him, Netanyahu, should remember that in a hall of perfect darkness, if you light one small candle, its precious light will be seen from afar by everyone. Your mission is to light a candle for truth and for the Jewish people. And Netanyahu said, that is what I am here to do. That was my mission. That's the truth and the light that the Rabbeinu Bachya is describing from the story of Shlomo HaMelech. And it's true, Netanyahu is talking about on a national level, that we put the Hanukkah candles, Al Pesach Beis Omi Bachutz, that the little light in the Jewish home of Jewish values, of a Torah perspective, illuminates the whole world, the darkness that exists on the outside. But perhaps most importantly, it's what we said before, that inside, when we feel that choshech, we should always remember that the neis of Chanukah was dafka with one pach of shemen that didn't even seem that it would suffice for 1 week of life, for the 7 extra days that it was necessary. And yet the Rabbeinu Shalom demonstrated to us that it did last, and that we have that ability to tap in to the chachma, the or of the spirit of the neshama that exists within us, and that can drive away even harbe min achoshech, both on the inside and on the outside. Wish all of us Chanukah.